Hey, folks, I know there are lots of business owners who listen to this show. Maybe some of you never planned on running a business, but now here you are. One thing you've always got to keep in mind is how much you're spending on your operating costs. That's one of the first things we had to keep in mind with WTF. And with things costing more today than they did when we started, you want to keep your expenses down. To reduce costs and headaches, be smart and use NetSuite by Oracle, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. Reduce IT costs, cut the costs of maintaining multiple systems, improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/WTF for more. That's NetSuite, NetSuite.com/WTF.
Lock the gate!
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers, what the fuck buddies, what the fuck Nicks? What's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast, WTF. I'm broadcasting outside of the house. I'm in New Mexico. I'm in my home state. Coming home is always a little dicey, but I was surprised, man. I mean, people are ready. They are ready to go. I flew Delta. I don't usually fly Delta. It wasn't terrible. There doesn't seem to be any other direct flights from Los Angeles to Albuquerque. And I flew Delta, and it was a shit show, man. I got to the airport, and it was fucking insane. There were lines wrapping around the building almost, if that's possible, at an airport. Just lines everywhere. I mean, I'm fortunate, I guess. I have TSA, and I was flying priority. But it was crazy. Granted, masks were being worn, but it's definitely a baptism in viral fire if you go to an airport right now, because people are like, fuck it. I'm out. I'm moving. I'm going. I'm taking that vacation. I don't care. I want to go somewhere. I'm going. Today on the show, Andrew Santino. He's a comedian. He's also an actor. He was on that series based on the Comedy Store, I'm Dying Up Here. He's currently a series regular on Dave. He also hosts a couple of podcasts, one with Bobby Lee, one of his own. And I didn't really know him that well. I knew he was around. I knew people liked him. I knew he was on that show. But it's one of these weird things where he's of another generation than I am. But I really didn't see him around. We didn't cross paths much at all, once or twice. And I never got to know him. I never saw much of his comedy. But I knew he was one of us. I knew he was a comedian. I knew he was good at it. And I've just been sort of doing a few of these interviews with these guys who were younger than me that I didn't really know. Like, I did one with Mark Normand. Santino's of that same generation. But he's a nice guy. And, you know, it was nice to talk to him. We had never really talked before, as I said. And then we ended up taking a hike together a couple days later. So maybe we're pals now. I don't know. And I did his podcast. I don't know when that's going to be up. Next week, maybe. Maybe we're pals now. I don't know how it works anymore. I don't. As a grown-up, I don't know how pals work. Do you know how pals work? Do you pick up new pals as a grown-up? So I came out, oddly, you know, given my... I don't have a distance from my parents. I like my parents. But the first thing I felt like I had to do once I got vaccinated was go visit my mother in Florida, which I did. And then this trip is primarily to see my father, who is getting on in years. Getting a little fragile. He's going to be 83 this year. He's having a little trouble walking. His thoughts are not as clear as they used to be. But I just wanted to come see them. I don't know what's changed in me, but it's not something. It's something that most other people have kind of innately. But I guess because of some residue or lifelong kind of defensiveness or mild resentment towards my upbringing, which I think is probably immature at this juncture, and seems to have dissipated a bit. And I can approach my parents as they age with a bit of empathy and compassion. And I'm happy about that, because some people have problematic relationships with their parents. I did, but it was never horrible. I mean, I always liked them all right. But I'm glad to be here, you know, and my dad's wife is, I think, also relieved. It's just, there's no other way to look at this. The life sometimes is just being sad, but it is part of the process, getting on in years, and there's something to appreciate it. There's sort of a sweet spot of the vulnerability of aging. Like, I think my father, by and large, has forgotten how to be an asshole. There's residue of it, but there's no real thrust to it. And it's nice. You make sure you sort of take time to appreciate the sweet spot of the slow decline. But that said, it has been nice. And, you know, because his brain is a little slower, a little different, it's just very, sometimes they say interesting things. I guess it's not some jump to compare it to a childlike thinking, but we were in the car. I was taking him over to, we were going to get something to eat. And he's like, hey, have you seen that the advertisement with the guy that has no pelvis? I'm like, what do you mean no pelvis? He's like, there's a guy with no pelvis. And I'm like, no pelvis? It's an ad on television? Yeah, no pelvis. And I'm like, from medicine? What is it? He's like, no, I don't know. He's got no pelvis. And then there's a bunch of other ones, no pelvis. And I'm like, no pelvis? I don't understand. It's not an ad for medicine? No. And I'm like, what the fuck is he talking about? And then I realized, like, oh, is it the guy that's half motorcycle, half human? He's like, yeah. So no pelvis. Right. Okay. Half motorcycle, half human. Right. The motor. It's like, I don't know. It just seemed like there was a lot of them. Yeah. He said, is it too many for it to be realistic? I think. Yeah. It was the sheer number of the fictional beings who were half motorcycle and half human that was daunting for my dad in his current state of perception. Just, it didn't seem realistic, though, when all of them came. When I said, you mean when they're like, well, I think I said it's sort of a play on wild animals, like, you know, like horses, or a herd of them. He calls the herd. Right, the one guy calls the rest of them, and it seemed like too many. They must do that with the special effects or something. Yeah, yeah. It just didn't seem realistic. I mean, there's nothing realistic about it. But, and then the odd thing is, neither one of us, certainly not him, but I could not remember what the fuck that ad is for. So is that an effective ad? I didn't know what it was for, but you remember the weird motor. Yeah. I mean, I guess it's a progressive ad. They're not paying for this spot, but, being home is interesting, man. You know how it is. There's something so comforting and so horrific about it simultaneously. And I don't know what I do here. You know, I've had these thoughts, and I don't know about you, but I, you know, for the past 5 years, 5 or 6 years, I find myself, you know, looking at homes here, you know, looking at homes. Like, I have these ideas in my head. Yeah, I'm driving around here. I'm driving around these streets and these roads that I grew up on. Do I want to come back here? Has anything changed? What is here? I mean, I love my house. I love my house in California. You know, we'll see. I don't know if the entire state's going to burn down this year. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm just starting to question this weird nostalgia, because it was strange. I was driving, you know, I grew up, I stay at a place here, beautiful place called Los Poblanos. And I've talked to you about this before. I knew the family that lived here when we were kids. I knew all of them. There was four of them. There was two houses on this property and eight people. And I knew them all because I went to school with most of them, the ones my age, and they still own the property and it's beautiful, but it's literally a block away from where I grew up. And for some reason, I always drive down the street to look at the lot where my old house was. It's not there anymore. There's another house that looks kind of like it. And I don't know what I'm waiting for. I don't know what kicks in. I don't know what I think's going to happen. But I actually picked up my dad to try to drive him through some things that he might remember. And I drove by the house that we've originally moved into when I came here to Albuquerque in 69, probably. And so I was, what, 7? And it's just odd to go to sort of see what the memory holds on to or what it remembers, and wondering, like, what has changed? Has my memory changed, or has this block changed? Obviously, both are true. Obviously, people do different things with the homes around the neighborhood. Some homes are gone entirely. Not unlike things in your memory. But I drove down to the elementary school that I went to, which was right down the street from the house we were originally in, and that looked totally different. But I was in that schoolyard. You know, I shed blood in that schoolyard. I got goat heads stuck in my hands in that schoolyard. I got bitten by ants in that schoolyard. I walked around with crutches. I had my first crushes there. It's just, what does it all mean? I guess there's just these journeys through memory. You know, I'm trying to jog my dad's memory. I'm trying to get a sense of where he's at mentally around memory. And it's interesting what sticks and what doesn't. So many of my memories are clear, and so many of them, they're just fragments in my head, bits and pieces of things I did, getting in front of my third grade class and reciting all of the presidents in order because I'd memorized them. Doing weird shows in front of my class with this other kid, Jerry Graves. We'd do bits from Sesame Street where he played Grover, and I'd interview him. And like, I just, that's when I started show business. Those two things, saying the presidents in order and interviewing Grover, was really one the original WTF in third grade, Mrs. Webb's class, if anyone remembers. I don't think there's any audio available. But driving through the memories, it's kind of amazing. I guess I get overwhelmed with it, so there's no way this can't be bittersweet. And I spent time with my old buddy David Kleinfeld, who I've known since second grade, and you kind of go over the things. There's a 40-year high school reunion coming. I can't fucking believe it, but it's weird. It just is interesting what you hold on to. Do you hold on to good things, or do you hold on to embarrassing things? Do you hold on to painful things? What are the things you hold on to? Weird things? Other people's vulnerability? What are these moments? Because most of them come out, most of them are moments. They're not, you know, I remember trying to make an arrowhead across the street at this guy Peter's house with taking a rock and like chipping away at another rock. A piece of obsidian, I think, or a black rock that I had found, and a rock chip went into my eye and pierced my cornea, and I had to wear a patch for a while. See, I wouldn't call that a good memory, but I remember it. I remember he also had a small naked picture of his mother that didn't show much. But, you know, these are, you know, it's a little yin and yang there, right? And he wasn't even my friend. He just lived across the street. So I was driving around with my dad. It was, you know, it was interesting. It was interesting, and heavy and, emotional and human and good to move through it with him. All right, folks. So Andrew Santino, as I said, a comedian, actor, new friend, I think. He hosts the podcast Whiskey Ginger and is the co-host of Bad Friends with Bobby Lee. You can get them wherever you get podcasts and watch them on YouTube. And this is me talking to Andrew Santino. What I don't understand with that, I was thinking about last night after I left you, but I was doing a spot, and I'm sort of in a, I give zero fucks at it, and I'm kind of pushing the envelope a little again. Good. I'm kind of. And sort of like, hey, man, a joke's a joke. And then you got to really think about it, because I thought about it last night. For myself, like, I'm talking about death. You know, I'm talking about my dad's beginning dementia and shit.
Yeah.
So how do you frame that in that you've got to believe the tone of this has to be an antidote. It can't be just mocking the thing. It's got to make the people that have experienced it feel better.
Right.
Now, I don't think you have any control over what triggers anybody. But I think if a joke is designed correctly, people, even people who feel pain about what you're talking about, should be like, oh, yeah, it's...
Right. Yeah, no, I know what that feels like. Yeah, at least it hits them in a good, in a spot that they go, even if it's uncomfortable, they understand how you can find the humor in the chaos.
What you're trying to do is disarm it, not trying to make it worse. You're not trying to inflame it with a joke.
Right.
I mean, the only reason we're fucking funny is to, to avoid pain.
Yeah. 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 To get away from all the shit that really hurts our feelings. But all the stuff gets kind of expunged by, you know, all these other things around us, right? Our insecurities come bleeding through when we really hear something that hurts us. Someone could say Mark Maron sucks. Yeah. Mark Maron sucks.
I think
Mark
they Maron. Said it today. Let me see. Let's look at Twitter.
I'm sure. But it doesn't bother you. But
someone's doing that right now? Of course it bothers me.
No, it doesn't.
It does a little.
It bothers you when, I think it really bothers us when it's something that we know that we don't like about ourselves.
Of course. Then the good ones, the good trolls, they can fucking find that right away.
Oh, they got you. Yeah.
But like, it always bothers me. But what I've learned to do is just not engage. Like I have to, it's sort of Zen mind shit.
Right.
Like, you know, like if I see some of that and there's that impulse and I'm like, nah, just take a breath. It'll be gone.
Walk away.
Or mute it. Just mute. I don't even block them anyway. I don't want to give them the satisfaction. I'll just mute it, and it's like, I don't see it.
Blocking is giving them power.
Exactly.
That's giving them a lot of firepower.
I don't give enough blocking.
Well, I'm an inch away from deleting Twitter. I've said this for the past, I don't know.
Decade? Me too.
Yeah, yeah. 10 years.
Have
that
you
I was
ever
like,
done? You can do it for 2 months.
I've done it. I've done it before. But I'm talking about physically deleting my account forever. I've thought about that, of like erasing the account.
Now, okay, so you have that moment where you're going to do that. Now, What drives that? Why? What? Because like for me, it's sort of like I don't want to be vulnerable to this shit anymore. I don't want to be public, yeah. And I don't want to be attacked by nobodies.
No, but for me, it's like I what am I? I've started to go. What am I getting out of this? Someone said to me,
"It's like crack." What do you mean?
Someone said about the podcast world. When you do podcasts with people,
yeah.
What are you getting out of it? Are you getting something? Am I getting something? Is it a duality? Is it? And so Twitter's the same way. Like, am I getting anything out of this? Truly.
Mm.
And I've started to learn that I wasn't getting anything out of it. It wasn't fun. I wasn't getting like humor satisfaction.
Yeah.
I wasn't even getting entertainment anymore.
But were you getting likes?
No, because I don't post. That's my thing. I stopped posting.
I don't post much. I just post to promote.
That same. So Twitter for me was like a business tool, and then I would go on it. I used to go on it to have some, to watch fun stuff go down. Great tweets from comics that I love and respect,
right.
Or something really funny or engaging. That's just
but
kinda,
now we don't respect any of them anymore.
No, but they all suck. It's all gone by the wayside. I just don't love it anymore.
Oh, no, it's the worst. And it really feels like a sewer.
Yeah.
Like it feels like such a consistent sewer of fucking, the subconscious of the world in the worst way.
Yes.
It's the worst of it.
But there, some of those sewer rats are very, very good at just
hurting you,
unearthing shit and hurting you and being mean for no reason.
It's such a, we all do it and people do it to us too. Like that guy sucks. It's like, I've been doing this 30 years, 40 years.
Yeah.
I don't suck.
You heard one joke.
Yeah.
You
maybe don't like me.
Right.
I understand.
But I don't suck.
I suck.
Yeah. No, I suck, but my art doesn't suck.
Yeah.
Yeah. You may not like me.
Right. Right. Or I don't like me. I understand it.
Yeah, right.
But I don't suck. I'm just not for you.
Right. No, it's true. Yeah, I did a phone interview for this thing recently, and the guy said, you've really kind of made a little bit of headway in the comedy world, and it's a great pop for you. And I was like, it's only been 16 years of me grinding my fucking head at, you know, like, but people don't know or care that you've put in any effort into that.
But for them,
it's nothing.
Oh, yeah. Now, radio guys, like, being condescending. Surprise.
That's why I quit doing those.
But we're all doing radio. It's like, who knew that this would be the aspiration, a world of mediocre radio personality? Like it used to be when you were a comic and you'd see the comic who is the side guy at the radio station, you'd be like, oh, that guy fucking
blew
it.
Poor bastard.
But it's like, no, he didn't. He just didn't do it on his own terms.
Right, right. He's just doing it from a corporate level.
Yeah, we can do it now, but we decide.
Right, it's ours.
Yeah.
All those years of going, I don't want to go do radio.
Fuck radio.
Now I do
it
every day.
In our house. It's weird. It blew my mind. Kevin Christie brought that up to me. Like, I never really thought about it. That, like, most podcasts, if there's more than one person, it's just some sort of version of drive time radio.
Totally.
It's just two idiots talking. Or
do you have any buttons there to make noises? The whing?
No.
Any of that stuff?
I have an old one from when I did radio. They were called 360 machine.
Right.
Yeah, it was a programmable machine and you could record on all the buttons.
Right.
I used to have them. Yeah. I mean, we didn't have noises and I never really got the hang of it. So wait, 16 years?
Well, no. 15 years.
15. But that's
yeah,
that's,
15 years.
That's all in. That's for real.
Yeah.
Because, like, I don't know you at all. I don't know how that happened. But, like, I knew of you because you were on the show, and then people said you were funny. But somehow or another, we never really crossed paths.
Well, here's what it is. I can explain it. Because this happens.
You're avoiding me.
Yes.
You'd look at the schedule and be like, fuck that guy.
Fuck Maron. No, but honestly, for many, many people, particularly, like, your generation of comics, say the same thing to me.
Oh, really?
In the sense of, like, I never met that guy, but I've heard you were funny. I've always been on when somebody go. You know what? When somebody goes, who's your group? Your comedic friendship circle. You can probably name.
Are you doing my job now?
Yeah.
Like who'd you? Where'd you come up?
Yeah, here in L.A.
Oh,
I started in L.A.
Oh, really?
But when somebody asks me who's my friendship circle, if they ask you, you can name it. For me, I couldn't tell you. I have guys that I...
Different when you come up here.
Yeah, I just have a lot of groups of people I can associate with. I started in East Side rooms, and then I made my way to the store. And then I was an improv guy for a long time. Then I was, you know, doing East Side rooms again. And I had touched
That's
a lot of different groups.
I know guys who came up here.
Yeah.
And it seemed like the guys who came up here from my day, like who were like people like Spade or Sandler, those guys who were in Sandler was in New York for 5 minutes when he was a kid. But they knew, the guys that came up in my generation, they were like, they knew the game.
Yeah.
Like, it's a hard town to come up in.
Yeah.
But they came out like with show business in mind.
Totally.
Like, for me, I didn't understand show business till like 3 years ago.
Now it's making sense.
Yeah. Now I get how I fucked up.
Right.
But I somehow, because of my garage, I was able to make something happen. But I never understood it as a business.
Yeah. But I learned fast.
But when in New York, you could definitely see... You know, like I started out with Attell, Jeff Ross, Todd Barry, Sarah Silverman, right. Nick DiPaolo. Like there was a whole crew of guys that were after like the Colin Quinn generation.
Right.
Then we were all there. And those are the guys I started with.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. People ask, who's your crew?
Weren't my crew, but they were around.
But you know what I mean? That's kind of an associated acts would be the best way to say it. I didn't have any.
Well, I mean,
I still don't.
But I get it. But I mean, for what the question is like when you were starting out, when you were doing mics,
yeah,
on the East Side,
yeah,
who do we know that was doing them with you?
A lot of those guys either quit or moved on to other shit.
Smart guys.
I would say they're much smarter than us. I would say guys that I really, you know, Jake Wiseman was somebody who always loved. You don't know him?
I know the name, I think.
Yeah, he's great.
But I'm just old now. I used to think, like, I'm in the loop. I know all the guys.
Well, Ron Funches and I kind of started together at the same... Or, I mean, you know, we kind of... When he moved here from
Portland,
he was kind of in my clique of young... See? You know, I can say this. The guys that I did a half hour with on Comedy Central
right.
was me, Brooks Whelan, Mark Normand, Sam Morrell, those are New York guys.
No, I know those
and
guys.
Then L.A. guys would be... It was... besides Brooks, it was also Tone Bell and Hampton Yount. Do you know Hampton?
Uh-uh.
So, yeah, that was my half-hour group of guys, and that was kind of my generation of guys.
It's weird. The reason I don't know some of them now, because things are so different. I mean,
yeah.
When I was coming up, we were all sort of gunning for the same thing, and there was only a few outlets.
Right.
So anybody who got that exposure, who got the deal for whatever, you kind of knew. Because there was only like, you know, three networks and, you know, a couple cable outlets. And so you'd know.
Yeah.
Now, like, there are guys like, oh, he's fucking huge. And you're like, what do you mean he's huge? Got a million this, million that. I'm like, I don't know that guy.
Right.
On what? You don't even know what that is.
But that's great. I think now the outlets
are fine.
Because we were so tired of fighting for the same things. Like, we were all fighting for the same
shit.
What's
the quality, though? Isn't TikTok just like just tricks?
But that's not exist. That doesn't exist in our world. You know that. That's
I don't know what exists.
What exists is hardworking comics who make it, quote unquote, who have a continual career.
Right.
They didn't come from any of those things, and you know that. When they say, when somebody goes
Except
like,
for
oh.
Bo Burnham.
Yeah,
Bo Burnham
is a anomaly, literal anomaly. He's
guy.
A talented anomaly. Yeah. He doesn't exist. You know what I mean? He doesn't exist. He did comedy at 15 years old. It became in the zeitgeist of online comedy humor.
Well, he was the first like YouTube-y guy.
He's the one.
Yeah.
But you can't name another one.
And then before that, it was the Dane phenomenon.
But also a guy that captivated the singular market that you... Okay, Dane is that. Bo was that.
Yeah.
There are no others.
Yeah.
Maybe someone came and went.
I like how you thought... Look, I have a chart about this.
Yeah, I did it at home. It's on my wall. And there's lines connected.
It's my vision board.
Right.
Yeah.
But it is true, though. Bo was an exception to the rule. We like to think that there's these outlets that are brewing up shitty comics that are going to enter our world. It doesn't exist.
I don't really understand how it all works. But I agree with you because even when we started doing alt comedy, you know, I was already a club guy. We talked about this on your show.
Yeah.
There are people who organically came out of the alt world. There's not that many.
Yeah, no, there's not. I mean, well, your generation probably spurred the biggest names of that world. And then it sort of...
But like people like Galifianakis, he was a club guy. He started in regular clubs.
Yeah, but he became synonymous with alternative
comedy.
Yeah,
but even like me and Patton, you know, we ended up in San Francisco at the same time and he started in regular clubs in Baltimore. He's a regular club guy,
right.
But you kind of get... Because we started doing those rooms that more suited our point of view, but I can, you know, I can vouch for his club bona fides.
Right, but also this is this never ending argument that exists only in Los Angeles, by the way.
Only in comedies? With comics?
Yeah, of like club versus non-club guys, and you're like, what does that even mean?
It's important.
It's such bullshit.
It's important, Andrew. Yeah.
Someone great tweeted, yeah. And he was an East Side guy, and I wish I would know, I don't want to call
See,
him
like,
out.
I don't even know what that means, an East Side guy.
A non-comedy store guy.
Oh.
You know,
so, right. So,
guys like, that only did...
Not quite good enough to...
Oh, see. Yeah. Interesting. Yes. Yeah, but he tweeted something along the lines of, all these East Side rooms make fun of the Comedy Store for being like this bro commercial bullshit. And you're like, go to a Comedy Store show.
Yeah, really.
Go to a Comedy Store show. See the audience. It's the most diverse, outlandish group of, I can't believe these people in the same room together. You go to an East Side room, oftentimes...
It's just people's friends.
It's just a bunch of fucking white people with beards.
I couldn't stand doing it.
It's whites with beards.
Even when I went to Nerd Melt and shit, I was like, what is this? Where's the mix of it? And there's a bro contingent at the store, but you know, sure. It's like those shows, there's a nice balance between like big stars, bros, people you feel kind of bad about. Mm-hmm. Kind of like, oh, this is a little sad.
Yeah.
I hope they do okay.
Isn't that nice to feel all the waves of that?
The full range of emotion. And people are very forgiving about it. Mm-hmm. Like they assume because you're up there, you know, you have to be reckoned with.
Right.
And there's a lot of old dudes that were like, what's happening? It's like,
change.
So
fucking change, man. Yeah. That's what's happening.
So, wait, so you grew up in Chicago?
I grew up in Chicago.
Chicago?
Chicago. And then I moved to go to school in Arizona.
But wait, so what was Chicago, man? So what was my deal? What was the crucible that created you? What were you, chiseled?
My parents got divorced before I was one.
Oh, that's it.
There
so
it
you're
is.
Broken.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
My
How
dad,
old were you?
Before I was one. I never knew
before
my parents.
Before you were one.
Yeah, my parents were never together. In my mind, I never saw them together.
So Santino, the old man?
The
gone?
Old man. No, he's...
But he took off.
Well, he went to jail. Prison.
Hmm.
The other one.
Big time.
Multiple times. He went to prison a few times.
So he was a failure at whatever he was doing.
Yeah, he was very, very good at it.
Oh,
yeah.
But he got caught.
I think he loved cocaine a lot. Oh, I think drugs were my father's vice.
Wait, so you had to backload all this information or you had a relationship with the guy?
I never knew the guy. I only had to learn him as I got older.
Really?
Yeah.
So do you have brothers and sisters from the same man?
No, I'm the only of mine.
The only kid.
The only kid of my mom and dad. My mom and my stepdad have my sister, and then my dad has children of his own.
And you just heard about that?
I would slowly learn about their existence.
So wait, so when do you, so okay, you're growing, how old were you when your mom married the stepdad?
They got married when I was 9.
Oh, so you had, it was just you and your mom?
For a while, yeah, living in the city, and we lived downtown Chicago in these high rises are quite luxurious, but then I learned... We were on like government subsidy programs because my mom worked for the companies that property managed these high rises.
Oh, so she got
so we kind of lived in the laps of luxury, but we had no money.
Right.
She was a working woman. We had money, but like.
But she figured out an angle to get the good place.
It was incredible. Yeah. So we would move from building to building, and we lived in 3 different buildings in downtown Chicago. She met my stepdad.
What's he do?
He was in the automotive industry. Like he worked for Turtle Wax for years.
Turtle Wax.
Do you know what that is?
Sure.
Yeah, and when they
it's a line of car care products.
Correct.
Yes.
And he bounced around in the automotive industry, and then when she got pregnant with my sister, they wanted to move to the suburbs because they didn't want to raise another kid in the city. They had fucked up one, and they were like, "We can't fuck up two."
You
know? Yeah. Me.
So when do you start piecing together stuff about your dad?
You know, it was always so, you know that song, The Cat's in the Cradle?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's like literally my life. Yeah. I mean that genuinely. You know when somebody goes, that song's written about me? It really is. Like my father was never present in my life. My stepdad was a great father to me, a great dad to me. Yeah. But my father would do that thing where he'd be like, I'm coming to pick you up and never come.
Oh,
that was real.
Come on.
I'd sit on the porch and my mom, to this day, loathes, I mean, couldn't, you know when someone's like, oh, I don't really hate my ex. My mom couldn't hate a human anymore on earth because of me.
How he treated
you. Not because of them. Yeah. She doesn't give a fuck about their mishap of a relationship.
Right, but just how could you do that to the kid?
To the kid.
You're sitting out there with your baseball glove.
Right, with a bat. Always with a bat. Dad, can we play hit instead of catch? I think that shaped me a lot as far as like become let down. I understood what being let down meant. I understood what gauging expectations.
But
meant.
Wait, but so this started happening when you were like 3, 4, 5?
When I mean, it, when it you... started when, probably when I was 4 or 5, and then it continued on into my
So
young teens.
So every time that happened, your mom would have to be like, he didn't, like she would explain
him. She really wouldn't say much. To be honest with you, my mom and I have an extremely close bond because, yeah. And she, we understand each other remarkably well. We right. don't say, I understand how she feels and she knows how I feel. And we move forward to something else together.
But you've met the guy.
No, I know. Yes, of course. I'm just saying he was such a sporadic insertion in my life that it was so random. I only know what I know of him in snippets. It reads like a.
So he would come in the car and you.
He'd pick me up and I'd spend a day with him or 2 days with him.
And what would you do?
Go on his job runs. He was a contractor. I'd go to the south side of Chicago or the west side of Chicago.
Yeah.
And he would do these job runs in these predominantly black neighborhoods. And they loved him and he was a people person. That's the one thing my mother was like, at least you took away.
So he,
personality.
He was like, there he is.
Everybody loved him. Everyone loves him. He is bigger than life. I mean, he can.
Oh, yeah.
He can talk to anybody. He's,
oh, yeah.
And people love him. Yeah.
Santino.
Yeah. Yeah. He just had a vibe about him where he was really good at not making other people feel less than.
Mm.
We're all equals all the time, no matter race or color. He was very good at that, which made him a good salesman.
Yeah.
You know, he related to many different people.
Was he a salesman?
Yeah, a contractor. So he would be, you know, he'd be selling work.
So was he? Oh, see, he was a fix-it guy.
He would assemble a crew to redo kitchens and decks and
hustler.
A lot of exterior work. Oh yeah. And his father was a hustler. My grandfather worked at the dog track until he died a couple months ago.
In Chicago.
Yeah, there's a horse track. There's Arlington, and there's Maywood, a dog track, a greyhound dog track.
Greyhounds. Yeah.
My grandfather was a consummate gambler who spent his entire living at the track working there.
And gambling there.
Yeah. And was a numbers runner for the mob when he was a kid.
Numbers.
Yeah. So he was like when he was a young kid, he was a numbers runner for the mafia.
Sure. Running around the neighborhood with the pad.
Yeah. So I learned what his friends were. And I've talked about this before, but you know, he had friend Joe the Hat was one of his friends.
Sure.
I thought that was normal to have
the guys with the nicknames.
Right. I thought that was a thing that people do because generationally.
So was your dad connected?
Only through his father.
Oh.
But my father got into his own world through drugs and partying.
Yeah.
And I guess you could say those are branches of one another.
But he didn't deal?
That's the other thing. I don't know.
Oh, you don't know.
All I know is
is he around?
Yeah. He's still alive. He's in Chicago. We speak, like I said, we speak like cats in the cradle.
Yeah.
Hey, I'd love to see you. And I'm like, I got my own shit going on. It's tough to now.
But he's out of the Juscow?
Yeah. Yeah, he's out.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but my stepdad is my dad. I call him my dad.
Sure, of course,
yeah. And he was always the father figure.
Right.
I mean, he taught me how to ride a bike and take a punch and play a sport. And
how do you teach someone to take a punch?
No, your father hits you. You got to fucking let him
Hold
lay one
still.
Into you. Yeah, don't be a pussy about leaning against the wall and you take a... He just really was kind of like the everything I needed.
Yeah.
But the one thing that was missing was I never understood why... This guy couldn't get it. No, he just couldn't get it together. It was more like, why couldn't you get it together?
And
is life
like,
that hard?
And you're kind of a hyper together guy.
I am. If you saw my house, you'd be nauseated.
What it's like?
Well,
everything
it's just,
is in place.
Everything goes in its place. Mise en place.
Yeah. So when you walked into my house, you're like, "What's all this stuff on the floor?"
No, yours is quite neat, actually.
Yeah,
you're very neat.
Yeah.
My stepdad was a military kid, so.
Oh, really?
That also bleeds over into this.
Discipline.
Yeah, and also just like with like, I'm annoyingly OCD, where like shoes by the front door.
Right. Oh, really?
And I'd say to my wife, I'd be like, why are there three pairs of shoes by the front door?
Huh.
And she's like, who the fuck cares?
Yeah.
And I'm like, let's just keep one.
Problem.
Yeah, let's keep one by the front door.
Can't have things out of balance.
Yeah, that's annoying. I think that's overcompensating for the lack of
structure. I'd lock in on stuff. Well, I mean, I do that when I am, like I told you yesterday, like I've got this thing where I'm locking onto things that I have to get like I have been dealing with this aerator that goes into one of my bathroom faucets. You know the little thing that fits where the water comes out.
Yeah.
There's an aerator and then like a screw in I guess you'd call it a washer.
It's a washer. It's almost like a washer.
And I've bought two sizes that don't fit, and I'm like, I'm in this thing, like, and it doesn't even need it,
right?
Like, I had a plumber come to fix it, and he said the aerator was clogged. So I say, I'll just get another one. But you don't know about plumbing,
no.
Do you know about plumbing?
Nothing.
So now I'm in it, like, I'm in it for like $30 already in aerators that are useless. And then I was at the hardware store yesterday. I'm like, oh, I can bring the whole screw-in thing in. You can get the whole piece,
right?
So Today's a big day.
Today's a huge day.
Oh, big. Yeah, I'm going in with the piece.
I'm excited for you. I'm excited for that moment that happens.
When I get it in
where
there?
Where the guy goes, you brought the wrong fucking thing.
Yeah, yeah,
and you're like, oh,
they don't make this anymore.
They don't, huh? Is there a way for me to get it online? Or is like, listen, man, just hire a plumber. You're like, but I already had the guy. I can do this myself.
How hard is it?
Yeah, and he's like, all right, well, listen, either hire a guy or I got not, I get.
Right.
I like being fucked off by those people because we deserve it. We think we can do their things.
Everyone thinks they can do things. You just look it up.
Yeah.
Anything you, like, how do you do this? Like, there's got to be something online. And there is.
There is.
There is.
Doesn't mean you're going to do it well.
But yeah, but also it feels like cheating. Like, this is not the way people learned.
No.
Yeah, there was years of practice.
Right, and embarrassment from the guy. Well, like the guy came over to clip all these trees. We have an oak tree. It has to be cut by, the city has to approve an arborist. It's actually illegal in LA County to fuck with oak trees.
Same with up north.
Right, so we have these arborists that have to come to approve what you can cut.
Uh-huh.
And he would ask me questions about like, sun numbers and shade percentages to certain parts of the house.
Right.
And I'm talking out of my ass like I know what I'm saying. Because he says it to you as if you know, like, you know the sun number on this side of the home.
They figure if you're going to be in that proximity to that tree, you've got to be obsessed.
Yes, don't you know? Yeah, how do you not know?
You have one of the classic oaks.
It's insane. And I just ramble on. I go, right, yes, of course. Yeah, I think it's, what did you say it was? And then he'll tell you, sort of like, that's it.
What can I do?
Yes.
Can we do this? Right. I need to...
And at the end of it, you just realize you don't know shit. But also, it's kind of comfortable because you know that they know that none of us know shit.
Well, the weird thing is, depending on how you grow up in the world, or it's like you don't always know that you can pay people to do things.
Right.
It's like, I'm going to do this myself. And then you're like, I have no idea what I'm doing. It's like, pay a guy like $15 an hour.
Who does it for a living all day long.
Just fucking do it.
Right.
You know, it's amazing. And then when they come and do it, when they leave, you kind of feel like half like you did it. I made that happen.
I mean, I did the right thing.
I was a contractor.
Yeah, when they fix it, you feel good.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Like, have you ever painted any rooms in your home?
I'm not going to do that.
See, that's funny.
I mean, I don't mind doing it, but I know there's guys who can hold a line better. You got to be able to cut that line.
Yeah, well, my wife's dad is a contractor, and he is brilliant with fixing stuff.
Yeah.
And when we bought the house, that was the one thing. He's like, we should paint it together, all of us.
Oh, that's nice.
So we did. And also, I gained a new level of respect for people that paint.
Oh, yeah.
It is a fucking nightmare.
For sure.
Taping, prepping. Then that's just the first coat, which takes you days of these rooms.
Yeah.
And then the second, you're like, oh, there's another time we have to do
Here's
this?
Here's how I like to handle that. All right, so you're all good? All right, I'm going out.
My podcast isn't as successful as yours, so I need to cut corners where I can financially.
I'll be back in a few hours.
Right.
And then you come back like, oh my God.
You guys did great.
This is amazing.
Yeah, the level of respect I earned when you have a home and you learn when people fix stuff, you're like, oh, this is a fucking nightmare. I can't believe you do this.
I do it all the time. I try to fix stuff all the time. And I can handle some things.
But like what? Like, what's the biggest thing you fixed? Like genuinely where someone would go, wow, that's pretty impressive. You knew how to do that.
I don't know.
Yeah, because it's nothing substantial.
No, it's just little things here and there. I mean, I don't fix it. Like, it's the problem with fixing is that you can start it, but you got to follow all the way through. And there's a lot of tricks to getting things back together.
Right, right.
Taking things apart is easy.
So easy.
But putting them back together, like, oh, did you try to put that on first? Like, I don't know.
I didn't know that goes on first.
How can I know?
This is my level of fixing stuff. One of the toilets slowly leaks. I just have to turn off the water when I'm done using the toilet now, until the plumber comes and fixes it.
Oh, I can get into the back of a toilet and do stuff.
I don't even want to.
I can do that.
Really? You want to go over and do it, please?
No, I mean, what's the problem?
It's just
running?
Yeah, well, it's such an old system. I think the lines are leaking. So I think it needs to be.
Oh, it's running.
Yeah. Well, barely. You can hear it slow, so
faint. Yeah,
that's
a simple thing.
What is it?
It's the thing that goes that when you flush it, it lifts up a little plug.
No, the cap, I've replaced that.
Oh.
Yeah, I've done that. I did that. See? Yeah. I did that.
So it's still running.
And I called my plumber, Renee, and I said, I explained to him, and he goes, I think it's a problem with the line itself, the line itself, which in my head goes, thousands of dollars.
Well, this happened here. That bottom bathroom, the new bathroom, like all of a sudden it was just covered in water. The entire walls, it was spraying out the back of one of the pipes behind the toilet. And it you can look in there. There's water stains all over the paint. I'm like, what the fuck is happening? And I had some doofus who I'd hired who was like not a real handyman. Yeah. Those are the guys you got to watch out for.
Totally.
And he's like, you know, I've seen this before. It's probably an old nail in one of the lines. I'm like, what?
How?
And then I just had a fucking plumber come over and he's like, you just got to tighten this up.
That's it. Just one crank to the left.
And that's it. And I was like, I'm a fucking idiot. No one thought of that. I had this other guy, this hack fucking handyman, this beer drinking guy that does two things well. Like, I remember when I had to get the contractor in to do this ADU, I asked that guy that got referred to me, and I'm like, do you know how to handle this? He's like, yeah. I'm like, do you?
The stutter.
Yeah, and I showed him the plans. He's like, oh, looks like you got to get a lot of stuff checked. I'm like, thanks. I'm going to thank you for your input.
We'll talk later.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll talk another time. I got fucked over by insurance.
You
got
to pay the guy.
We had a leak in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
I hear like, and it's the hot water heater. One of the hose lines broke. So I turn off the water source. I go and I get a new line.
Yeah.
But at this point, damage has been done to the pilot starter box.
Right.
We'll be right back. This is Guy Talk with Mark Maron and Andrew.
Guys who don't know how to fix
things.
Shit.
Yeah. But anyway, we got fucked. I called
Mark
insurance.
Mark Corolla?
Yeah, hit him up.
From what I understand, he put up some drywall 30 years ago because he's still talking about it.
Construction. He's doing it now. He's rebuilding North Hollywood.
Is he?
Yeah, that's what he says. Top to bottom.
Oh.
No, but I had to pay this guy to basically tell me that I was fucked because I called insurance and I said, you guys said you'd pay for this. And they said, yeah, but it's a warranty thing. And, da, da, da. And they ran us around so much for such a minuscule thing. From that point on, I said, if it breaks, we will just pay someone to fix it.
Or just get a new one.
Well, we did end up getting a new one.
A lot of times it's not as much as you think it is.
I'm also quite cheap. I'll say that. I'm very cheap.
Why is that?
Is
it the way you grew up?
A fear of it all going away.
Just the comic cheap? Kind of like, gotta hold on.
But I think I'm even more, I'm cheaper than most comics.
So what were you going, so you have this life where your dad's in and out of the, out of jail. He's a problem. He shows up occasionally, takes you down to the site.
Mm-hmm.
You have kind of a relationship.
Yeah.
Early on, it was sad. Was there a period where you're like, fuck that guy, I'm done?
I had a lot of fuck that guys.
Oh.
I mean, as you would in anything. I had a lot
of
those.
Did you ever fight him?
No, but I had a lot of like, I had a lot of moments where I realized I was a grown up.
Yeah.
And I was like, ah, fuck you. I don't owe you shit.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
right.
That was kind of a moment that I realized probably out of college.
Yeah.
I think he got annoyed or angry at something because he was, you know, he had gone through sobriety many times and had relapsed. And then I think he was annoyed that I didn't want him present for something personal. And my mom
like
was-
Like a graduation or something?
I don't really remember. I think it was like a birthday, whatever.
So did you have to deal with him drunk?
Never, no drunk, not no drunk. He was mostly-
So you had to deal with him jacked?
Never.
Oh.
Now the one credit I will give, unless I was too young to understand, was he never was fucked up around me.
Mm.
But around me, he was probably biding his time. It was probably like, I have the kid for 20 hours. I can stay sober for 20 hours and then get rid of him and go back.
Right.
Do I know that for a fact? No, but I imagine that's what it was.
And your mom, she's like straight?
No, she'll have a couple of drinks, but she never, I mean, she grew up, she's, you know, she's born in 55. So like she smoked pot. She was part of that revolution.
Yeah.
But you probably tried acid. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
but like never was.
You don't know if she tried acid?
No, she did.
Oh.
Yeah, she did. And now they're into weed again. It's so funny. My childhood getting yelled at for smoking pot.
Now everyone's into weed.
Now gummies are cool with my mom.
Oh, really?
She doesn't like smoking because she used to smoke cigarettes.
Yeah.
So she wants to get away from smoking. So she'll take gummies.
Yeah, I don't, like I've been sober so long, I missed the whole gummy thing. I missed all that stuff.
And it's a train that I don't know if you need to ride anyway.
Nah.
You it's not.
All I know is that people like never, they always do too much with gummies.
100%, yeah. That you can take a hit of a joint. You can't take like a little piece of a gummy.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem
it's not going to work.
People are like, I don't know, I forgot how to pee. You know, it's like, what?
That's what my buddy said when he first took it. He goes, I was worried about not breathing. I was like, that's not a fun way to get high.
Yeah.
He had his struggles, and I learned that I was my own man at some point. I just was like, oh, I don't fucking owe people anything.
Yeah.
I can be cordial and nice and polite to people, but I don't owe people shit.
Right.
And I always had that weird, like, well, you should do right by them. It's like, for what?
Yeah, I don't owe them respect.
No, you don't.
I'm with you. You know, and my parents weren't even that terrible, but it's sort of like this idea when you realize on some level that there's a good chunk of who you are that you had to put together by yourself.
Yeah.
Because they were not there
yes.
to do it.
You had to figure out Mark.
Right. So it's sort of like, I get the credit.
Right.
I don't hate you people, but you know, you were just sort of around.
Right. You built the thing that you've become, and those things shaped you a little bit, but
yeah.
I don't think anybody owes anybody shit. And I, you know what I used to say when I was a kid that I never really loved this idea that you had to always respect your elders.
I'm with you.
Because I was like, they could just be grown-up assholes.
No, I'm totally with you. And it's a weird thing that, you know, people don't really think about it.
Right.
Because they take it for granted. But it's like, you don't have to respect anybody who didn't fucking deserve the respect.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
It's just like we're this ridiculous kind of like submissive place.
Totally.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's sort of what part of the fuck you that drives being a comic.
Yes.
I mean, I have a fundamental lack of respect for almost everything.
Yeah. Yeah, almost. There's a few things I do respect.
No, like I appreciate other people's skills. Yeah. And like, you know, when I can plainly see that people are capable of doing what they say they're doing or artists or whatever.
Right.
But the idea that like just because you have a certain job or that you hold a certain place that like that commands respect, I don't know.
Why?
I don't know you.
And who made that rule?
Yeah.
Where did that come from?
So like, yeah, I'm not a complete fuck you to everything, you know, but there is a part of me that, and it's gotten softer as time has gone on, but I don't automatically think you, like there's certain people in like show business, like on the other side of the business, I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
How did, and I don't know if we need to go into it too much, but you know, it's like, you're just like living off of me.
Me, off of me.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm not even one of the big earners.
No. You're bottom feeding.
Yeah. I'm the guy that supplies pencils for the office.
Right. Yeah. You're barely making a dent in the books. But also, I understand our position. Like I've learned to just go right. This is who I am to them. And I'm okay with it now.
Yeah. But what was the path, man? I mean, so you went to college in where? Tucson?
No, I went to ASU in Phoenix. In Tempe.
Right. Oh, yeah. That's big.
Yeah. So what happened was, is my whole goal was to get to California, but I visited California and I knew immediately I could never afford it. And we had, you know, my parents were never going to be like, here's all the money to go to wherever you wanted. So I learned I could go to this school, the cheap out-of-state school, and I could get to California by way of, because I already knew in high school that I wanted to get into entertainment and specifically comedy. Yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
So, but you're running around Chicago. Like Chicago's a great city.
Yeah.
I think. I've grown to love it. I've worked there a lot. In recent years, and it's definitely its own thing. There's definitely a lot of there's like kind of like heavy people that smoke still.
Yeah, we're a fat city, but we're proud of it.
They smoke.
Yeah, we smoke. You have to smoke. You have to smoke to get through winter, and you have to have the burden of going out to a garage to smoke when you're still cold.
Yeah,
and you crack the door a little bit.
I like that though.
It's a cultured city, but it's also annoying when you grow up and everyone has this right to complain about the weather. It just gets tired. You're like, yeah, well then fucking we should move.
Yeah, I know it's cold here a lot.
Why don't we move? Yeah. I'm the only one that left Chicago.
Yeah,
my mom's one of 10 kids. All of the brothers and sisters, all the grandkids,
still
they all live in Chicago.
What do you make of that? Because like, it reminds me of Boston where I lived as well too. There's a lot of smoking and weight, and it's one of the great cities.
Yeah.
Like there's only a few in this country, and I think people develop a loyalty to it, and there's a whole way of thinking around it, and
because the culture,
Catholic families,
the culture supports that kind of lifestyle. I would say, like, because you have a strong sports team presence, which always does this bonding thing. It makes us feel like we're all on the same team.
I missed all that. Yeah.
But I mean, but it does, if you move there, it would kind of do it to you naturally now. You know, if you move to Chicago, you would go to a local bar or restaurant and you'd feel the camaraderie that is kind of lacking in places like LA
I feel that. Yeah.
We don't have that thing.
I feel that in Chicago more than, it's not New York much anymore either.
No, but New York is such a weird, different place. It's its own universe.
Different universes, but Chicago seems to have a core universe. Like, where'd you tape that special?
At the Vic.
Yeah, I did one at the Vic.
Yeah.
It looked different than mine.
I regretted it tremendously.
Sounded a little echoey.
Yeah, I hated it.
Why?
I wasn't ready to do that special. I didn't want to really do it. Showtime gave it to me because we did the show. I didn't love everything I put on it. I didn't really want to do it for some reason. I didn't love it and I didn't want to do it. Yeah, it was so many things, but I felt like I should. And I felt this pressure from Showtime
there's a lot of me out there that you were like, you just didn't feel baked.
Yeah.
You were half cooked. You weren't ready.
I wasn't ready, and I just didn't really feel. The only thing that I loved about it was I was going back home to do something that I was proud to be able to say I was able to do.
Yeah.
But outside of that, I didn't love the special. It wasn't the best version of me. 2016 or 2017.
Huh. So this is not that long ago.
No.
And you feel like in the last 3 years,
my strength has gotten tremendous. I've gotten so much stronger with how I structure now and the jokes I want to put out. And yeah, I just think I've gotten way stronger. I've gotten, that was more in, for me, it was more like when you think you're ready for something and you probably, you might,
oh, yeah.
you might not
I
be.
Always thought I was ready.
And you're probably not.
Like those stories I told you on your show, where I'm yelling and with that, I always thought, like, you know, why am I not?
Well, we all feel that way, yeah.
But honestly, looking back on it, I was not ready to handle anything.
No, but that's kind of the beauty of doing it. Then, like, I'm okay with it, right? And I'm okay with it, but also,
like, right now, like now, when I did the Joker, you know, from doing my podcast and talking to celebrities, everything, like, I was not freaked out to be doing a walk and talk with De Niro.
Yeah, because why?
He's just a guy.
Right.
Yeah, and then but you're looking at him, it's like fucking Robert De Niro. It's like, I know, but in person it's not the same.
No. He's just a guy.
Yeah.
He's a man who has flaws and you kind of feel
and
it from people.
Has a really hard time remembering very few lines.
Well, he's also, what is he, 80 now?
He's old.
Yeah. I mean, why do it anymore at this point?
I asked that, well, I don't know. He seems to have a lot going on. You know what I mean?
Yes, he does.
You know, you get the big money, you get the big life, and that can turn on you.
Again, my fear, when we talked about before. Mm. My fear is like, why would I start being the guy who has all the too much shit, and then you have to pay for all of it for the rest of your life? Fuck that.
You're feeding it every month.
No thanks.
Do you have a boat?
Yeah, no. Yeah, like, yeah. You got a boat. You have guest houses and
are
and,
you a boat guy?
No way. I hate
know.
Boats.
I mean, I don't
Why
I
do
don't,
I need to go out on a boat?
Motorcycle?
I like bikes, but I never will own one because, you know, I've had friends just get murdered on those things.
So, all right. So you knew you were going to get out of Chicago. You wanted that out. And in high school, you knew you were going to do comedy, but you weren't doing comedy in Chicago.
Yeah, no.
So you get into ASU, is it?
Yeah, which is not hard to do.
No, my brother went there. Yeah. I know people go there.
Kind of
and,
walk in.
What was the plan?
I met a bunch of Southern California guys. That school is filled with kids from California.
But what were you going to major in? Like just communication?
I did journalism.
Oh, journalism.
Yeah, English was my minor.
How'd that all pan out? Did you graduate?
I graduated summa cum laude, my friend, in 4 years.
Well, you know what it is, and I noticed this when I watch your stand-up, is sort of like with journalism, not so easy. With English, you can charm your way through it. You can definitely charm your way into honors.
I did. I truly did. You just kind of like, you meander, you shoulder your way through smoothly. You're like, I'm here, right? And they're like, you're fine.
Manage your electives properly.
Correct.
Nail them, you know what I mean? Stay away from the language one.
Easy. Get it. No Spanish. Fuck that. Second language, no way.
No, I tested out.
Yeah, so did I. Yeah, I didn't want to do it. I was like, I'm not doing that shit. Are you out of your mind?
Where's the dum-dum test?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't. I'm not proficient.
But then I learned that I knew in college I wanted to do it. And at the time, Tempe Improv was the only one that was around. Comedy-wise, I would do a couple of Mikey things, but they were atrocious. And I used to sneak into the Tempe Improv because I knew a girl that worked in the booth that I kind of hooked up with.
Right.
And I'd go see guys. I saw Mitch right before he died.
Was he working with me?
No.
I co-headlined with Mitch there.
It was Tempe. He did Tempe, probably a couple months before he died.
No, this would have been before that.
No, yeah, it was...
So you didn't look good.
It was terrible, man. It was actually the worst. I remember walking back to my dorm and being like, "Oh, that didn't make any sense. I didn't feel like the guy that I liked."
He was so strung out. He looked weird.
Yeah, it looked unusual. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. There just something was off.
Yeah, and you couldn't put your finger on it.
Right.
Really.
Yeah.
You were like, "Oh, well, interesting."
Yeah.
But I got to see a lot of people there, and I started to try a little bit. And then a friend of mine had said, my friend Colin had said, "Hey, if you don't come with me to California, if you go back to Chicago when we're done, you're never gonna fucking move."
That room, so the Tempe, you did open mics in college?
No.
Because that room was weird and hard.
No, I never did the improv.
Right, but it's a big weird room. That room.
Yeah, it sucked. For a comic now,
I really
looking
feel like
back,
it did suck.
Yeah,
it's still there, right?
It is. I've never played it, but you know, I learned quickly that if. My friends were like, if you don't move with us to Southern California to get to Los Angeles, you're going to go back to Chicago and get some bullshit job and you're not really going to go for it. So the influence of my friends was truly why I moved to Los Angeles.
Well, it's interesting because like there actually was a vital comedy scene in Chicago.
Yeah.
Like Chicago is, in terms of the modern show business landscape of comedy, is like the premier city.
Yeah.
It's not stand-up driven. But there's definitely plenty of comedy there.
Well, yeah. I mean, the Second City drove that place as far as comedy goes. But I knew that if I went back to Chicago, I would have too many of my old conveniences there of being close to family and getting lazy. And I thought, well, if I'm going to drown, I want to drown in the ocean.
It's wild, man, because coming out here with without anything.
No money, no connections.
It's the shittiest feeling in the world.
Yes.
Because you're just stranded.
Yep.
And you're like in Culver City or wherever, and you're like, how do I get from here?
I was in Culver City.
You were?
That's literally where I moved. I swear to God. National and the freeway. That's where I moved.
That's where I was.
National and the
on
freeway.
On Overland.
I was on National Boulevard by the fucking 10.
I was on Overland right off the freeway.
Yeah. National and the 10.
In an apartment.
Guess where I lived? In a partitioned off dining room. The dining room got turned into a bedroom for me.
Right.
And the two other guys slept in a bedroom, and we shared three guys, one bathroom.
Right. And you're just sitting there going, like, how do I get from here to that billboard?
Impossible.
No way to know.
Yeah. You just thought.
And they were all happening in secret. You drive around looking like it's probably going on in there. Look at that studio building. That's where
they're making a movie right now. Right. Sharon Stone is in there right now.
Yeah, doing it.
Yeah, that's what I felt. I felt this like, but also I learned quickly how to meander my way into the comedy scene, because I learned that it was like, oh, you just show up, hang out, be kind of cool, and work hard, you'll start getting more spots.
But you're a fan, so like, it's interesting, like, who told that story? I think it was Rick Kearns tells a story about doing a meeting. Like, he didn't have a car, but he got this big meeting at CBS or somewhere, and he goes in and takes the bus.
CBS.
Yeah, and he does the meeting, and then he's sitting at the bus stop, and the executives that he just met with drive out. Did they see him at the bus?
Good to meet you, Rick. Thanks. It's coming in 15. I'll be out of here soon. Yeah, but that's what this business is. You're trying to get the attention of multi-millionaires so you can get a little bit of
the pie. Or their lackeys.
Or the lackeys thereof, yeah. And you just want to get a little bit of peace. Just give me a little peace.
Oh, fucking worst. All right, so, but when do you do your first spots? What do you put together?
Well, the open mic at the Comedy Store, I used to go to the Sunday and Monday.
Oh, the Mondays?
Put my name in the bucket. And then, through there, I met Brooks Wheelan and Fahim Anwar were two of my closest friends. And those guys we would all tell each other about, hey, I heard there's a mic in Culver City, used to be one by that park, and there's a coffee shop. And then we'd all kind of keep sharing, and that's how I learned where mics were. There wasn't like a database of mics. You just had to like slowly learn.
No, it was like a circuit.
Right. It was like, oh, you can go here and here and here on Wednesday. And I have a calendar still in a bin that showed every night that I was doing where, and I would write down all these mics, and like on these nights I had to make this mic by this time so I could get to this one, and I just,
that was the thing. See, that wasn't the thing when I was younger, when I was starting out. So you'd had to go from the coffee shop to the bookstore to the laundromat.
Yep. And I would do it every fucking night. I'd work my day job all day, and then at night I was a PA.
Monday nights at the store. I remember when I was a doorman at the store back in the 80s, it's just like that line out in front of the store on Mondays.
Gross.
Like some guy wearing a garbage bag.
Yes.
Another guy in a chef's hat.
Some guy has a bird on his shoulder.
Yeah, it's like, what's happening?
Yeah, it was a nightmare. I fucking hated it. I went one time to-
And Don Barris going, how's everybody doing?
Right. Mocking your existence.
Yes.
And then I went to Mike's slowly but surely, and then started getting booked on produced shows. And then- grew from there and there and there and then went, you
so
know.
That's it. So no club affiliation until you had already put a few years in.
I went to the store. I did open mic to the store. But in 2007, the store was pretty low key. There wasn't much
going on.
Yeah,
I remember.
And then I would come back a little bit later. Tommy would eventually, who was the old booker there, would eventually start to really like me because I showed up very prepared. I would do my set and I would fuck off. Yeah. I didn't hang out.
Right.
And he said it to me because people who don't know, people hang out at the store too much.
Do they?
A lot of guys, when I was coming up, they would hang over there. They would hang out too much. You're like, you're there every night, all night. And
all
usually
night.
They're getting drunk.
Yeah. I mean, for me, like when I, as a grown up, when I went back to the store years later, you know, after whatever happened to me in the 80s or 90s, I don't stay there. I don't know what happens to that place after 10:30.
Well,
gone.
That's the problem, is young comics, I think, committed too much of their time to not going and doing other sets. I would show up, and I'm not saying my way is the right way, but Tommy liked it that it was like, you get up, you go on, you leave. And I was like, yeah, because I go do my best shit, show off for you, and I go home because I just wanted to get past.
Yeah.
I hung out a little bit, but I probably had some other bullshit set to go to.
Yeah.
So because of that, the culture that got created started to, it became apparent that, you know, I could do the OR, and then subsequently got passed in maybe 2010.
Right.
Maybe that was
right before he left.
Yeah. Literally, literally right before he left.
Dude, I didn't get my name on the wall till 2003. three or four, because when Duncan was booking it, he was like, how is your name not up there?
And they're actively trying to take it off, by the way. I'm on a committee of trying to take your name off the wall. No, we want it down. We want it down.
I worked so hard.
But on my birthday, I got passed at the Improv, which was a big deal. At the same time, I got passed at the store, and then I put in a lot of time at the store, but I also started to go over to, like, Meltdown or, you know.
I felt like I had to do all that shit, too, when I got back here.
Yeah, you do kind of have to start all over again, per se, in a weird way. You just kind of tag around. But because of your cultural influence and the people that your peers, you have probably an easier time showing up to these places than when I go to the Virgil. It was always a little bit like, he's a comedy store guy, or like I've never been booked at the Largo. I've never played Largo. I've never stepped foot in the Largo.
I get it. Yeah, I mean, like, but I always, but the weird thing is, for me, there's part of me that's sort of like, I'm really not this.
But you are.
But I am. I'm very much it.
Yeah, that's what I mean. You are, but you're trying to fight it.
I didn't come from it.
Yeah, but it's a part of your culture.
Well, it's like, it's a better audience for me sometimes, in a way.
Sure.
But also, it tempers me. Because, you know, I came up in the dark, shitty, dirty world, and I can be a dark, shitty, dirty person.
Right.
But there, it's sort of like, don't be so dark and shitty here.
Yeah, they want way more fluff.
It's not fluff. It's
yes.
They want more highbrow. It's not fluff.
I think they want a little bit more.
The people that would kill the hardest in alt rooms are club comics, because they don't know it.
Right.
Those audiences didn't come up in the club world, and the guys who work real clubs, they know how to do it. Yeah. So these guys would come in with their fucking straight up club act, and the alt rooms would be like, oh my God.
Right.
And they'd all of a sudden see what real comedy is, and then someone would get up there and, you know, talk about his pants for 20 minutes. And yeah, but, for me, it was hard following those guys.
Well, it's impossible. It's impossible. You have to bring real shit.
Yeah.
But unless when you're a famous comic, club comic, and you go to the alt rooms, it's easier. When you're a comic who is kind of known as a club guy, they do have a tendency to kind of want to shut you out a little bit.
No, I get what you're saying.
Which is fine. Which I
mean, I was
totally
always
respect.
Able to do both worlds, and I had equal resentment for both worlds for different
That's
reasons.
That's why it worked so well.
I guess.
They hated you everywhere.
Yeah, or I hated them more. It was
That's
more
what
like
it. Was. you had the hatred.
But the acting.
That was around the exact same time. Around 2010 when I got passed, I landed a job that got me out of my day job. And it was a hosting gig on MSN to just do like a comedic take on what's going on in the news today.
Oh, really?
And I got a contract to do it for one calendar year, and I literally called my mom and I was like, I can quit my fucking job.
Got insurance?
Yeah, like I finally could quit my job.
Which was what?
I was working a day job as a PA. Well, I was doing I was a PA for a movie studio. And then after that, I was working in the music industry, booking international tours for people like, we did Cypress Hill, Macy Gray. We were getting them visas.
You were the booking? Oh, you're just working for somebody.
We were working with their tour managers to get them visas and travel arrangements and all that stuff. I was a gopher. I would just, whatever they needed, I did all of it.
I did PA work. It's one of the reasons I became a doorman at the Comedy Store. It's because I got this random PA job for something Mitzi was producing, some garbage.
What was it? Do you know?
Yeah, I know.
What was it?
There was a period there in like, I guess it was like 87 maybe, where she was trying to do a comedy channel and shooting all these sketches with all her fucking weirdos.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, it was across the street where before House of Blues, there used to be a house there that she'd made into a restaurant called Barrymore's. It was like one of the Barrymore family's old Hollywood homes, and she had production offices over there. So it was, you know, right where they built that new building.
Yeah.
And I got the PA gig through somebody else, and she was fucking Danny Stone at the time, and there was all the like Karen Haber, Charlie Barnett, Danny Stone, Joey Kamen, all the people that you don't know.
No idea who those are.
Sure, but they were shooting these sketches, and I just remember getting the job as a PA and going up to her and go, Mitzi, you remember me? I auditioned for you like 6 weeks ago. And she's like, oh, yeah, you're more funny. Go tell Becker you want to be a doorman. And that's how I got the doorman job.
No shit.
Is I reminded her.
She didn't remember you, though.
Of course she did.
She did?
Yeah, like she wasn't going to let me fucking work. She wasn't that way. Just to let anybody. Nah.
See, it's funny because I've heard so many different versions of her over the years from different people.
Well, at that time, she wasn't losing it yet.
She was still all together.
Yes.
But even when she was all together, she was extremely PC mentally, right? I've heard that she was just, she was all over the place. She was trying to do 50 things at once. And
I guess, you know, but I do not think that if she really had, if I didn't hit a note, she would not have just told me to go get a doorman job.
Sure. I guess that's true.
That dude, it was such a weird, different world. When right. the fucking, and then I had to answer phones, I had to work the door, I had to drive the Jeep, I had to get her chicken salad. I did not fuck her.
That should be the name of your book. I did not fuck
I did not fuck Mitzi.
I did not fuck Mitzi. So much of that world seems pretty tragic to me.
Yeah. And it was a rolling tragedy, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When did that cease?
I don't know. You were there. I mean, I left. I lost my mind on coke, and I was gone by 88.
Good God.
And then I ran home to Albuquerque, cleaned up, went back to Boston, and got back on, started doing comedy again. All I wanted to do was do comedy. But then I really kind of reloaded back here full on 2006, 2007. It's been in and out.
Will you spend the rest of your life here, you think?
I don't know, dude. I don't know what you think in terms of, like, I sometimes fantasize about going where I grew up. I'm going to get a house in New Mexico. People do that. Industry's there. I could rent it out, all this stuff. But, like, do you really want it? What do you think you're going to find? What are you going to go back to high school?
Right. Go back to work at your high school.
Yeah. I'm going to go work at the restaurant I worked at in high school. No, it's gone. Yeah. The house I used to live in was leveled.
Really?
Yeah.
That's tragic to me.
They built another house there that looked kind of like the one I lived in. The area is the same. Not the very first house, but I don't know what you do.
I have dreams about going back to Chicago, though, because I love Chicago so much. The city is so rich. It's just like there's so much life there. Even if it's not anything like it was when I was a kid, it's still so rich. I mean, it's just
It does feel like you can't take the Chicago out of Chicago. Like New York, like they've moved everybody out. But
did New York ever really have a singular identity? It's a bunch of different identities all over the city.
Not really. It kind of did have a singular identity.
When you were there?
Well, no, I mean, you know, there's uptown, there's rich people, whatever. But, you know, it's a grid and the each neighborhood represented something. But there was a working class in New York that lived in Manhattan that can't live there anymore. So now, like, they're all moved out. You don't even know who owns the buildings. It's all kind of been turned out for, mollified and whatnot.
Yeah, so that's my thing is, like, I think that's Chicago just still has this we're all here thing. Chicago never got taken over by something. I mean, there has been a high influx of a lot of money.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of new money and a lot of very expensive parts of Chicago now. But it still has that thing that it's still working class, blue collar
city.
Yeah,
I feel that. So you got that one gig.
I got to quit my job, and that helped me do comedy.
Yeah. We got the PA job.
Somewhat full time, I guess you could say. It was.
But did you at some point decide you wanted to be an actor more than a comic? Or
I always had it in me. I always was like, I did a couple of plays in college. I always like really kind of wanted to, but I was so scared to admit it. Because I was like, comedy is something I can actually take on and not give a shit if I fail because I know it's this grind. Because I was a student of it. I was like, I know what it's going to take. You just have to bust ass all the time. With acting, I was like, I'm not that good looking. I don't have any formal training. So it was daunting to even think about it. But I would tell my manager at the time, throw me out for some shit if they want a goofy looking redheaded guy.
Yeah.
And then slowly but surely, I learned that I was, I was good at it. I just was like, oh, I'm pretty good at this. I could access emotions better than some of my peers.
Yeah.
And then I started landing shit. And then truly, I've said it before, but, Allison Jones, casting director, kind of really found me, so to speak.
Yeah.
Her and Wendy O'Brien were both like, you're good. You should really commit. And I started to learn that I was like, okay, maybe I should really try to go for shit. And from there, that's a whole nother game. Well, she put me in The Office, which was fucking huge.
Oh, you were on The Office?
I just did one little episode of The Office.
Yeah.
And after that, it was kind of like, what else can I find for you that you can show off?
Yeah, what else were you?
I did an episode of Arrested Development. I'd have to look it up. I know this sounds really sad, but I just don't.
Your IMDb? It doesn't matter.
But
the biggest thing you did was I'm Dying Up Here?
I'm Dying Up Here was to, I mean, I booked a pilot called, I did a show called Mixology in 2000. And
I kind of remember that.
It was an ABC show. That was kind of like the first thing I ever landed.
Yeah.
But I did, The Office, Arrested Development, Children's Hospital.
Oh, yeah.
Then I did The League, then I did that Mixology show. But before that, I did Punk'd for MTV. I did like one of the remakes of Punk'd.
Oh, you hosted it or just
was? No, I was one of the pranksters.
One of the assholes.
One of the assholes on there. Yeah, I did that thing and I helped write some of the bits. It was huge for me. Looking back, I'm glad I did it.
But when did you, were you like a Rogan guy?
In the sense, no. I mean, I guess people do associate my name with him now because he had me on his show and it helped me kind of gain some resonance in the podcast.
But you weren't a regular guy? You tour with him?
Once in a while, he'll let me go out and do some shows. If he's like, do you want to come open for me somewhere?
Right,
I will. I'll go wherever he wants to go.
Is it just
go.
You?
It's me, Ali Makovsky, Ian Edwards, Tony.
He has a few guys go before
him,
right?
A big clique of people that he'll take out once in a while.
But does he take out more than one at a time, I'm saying?
There's always somebody that opens the show and then a middle act. Or there'll be two middles and we just split time.
Right.
Me and Edwards would do that.
Ian.
Yeah, sure. And we'll just split time.
Yeah.
But Joe started to know who I was around the Comedy Store 6 years ago, something like that, and then just liked my stand-up.
Right.
And then was like, how come you don't have a podcast?
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, come do mine.
Yeah.
So I got to do his, and then I started to do other people's podcasts, and then I learned that I enjoyed it and I was okay at it.
Right.
But Joe, I would never say, like, I'm associated with him.
Right.
But I was never, like, one of his...
You didn't move to Austin.
I'm there. Mentally, I'm there. No. No, I had no fucking... When he joked about that, he was like, would you ever think about moving out here? I was like, you out of your fucking mind? Like, I just bought a house 2 years ago. I just finally got to a place when I could settle down here. But no, that's not... I'm not...
You're your own guy.
I am my own. Unfortunately, like we said before, I think I'm so much of my own guy. Sometimes it hurts me a little bit. I think it'd be helpful to be a part of a group, but I'm not.
I can't. I'm no good at it. I'm no good at it.
Yeah, it's tough.
Because as soon as I'm part of a group, I'm sort of like, who the fuck are these guys?
Yeah, I don't like these fucking guys. These guys are annoying. I'd rather be alone. I really do my own thing a lot.
Yeah.
A lot, which is a benefit.
I can work in an ensemble. I'm good. I can work with people, like acting or anything else.
Sure.
But in terms of sort of like, hey, me and the boys are going, nah, I'm not one of the boys.
I just don't agree with enough people enough to just get involved. And I want to poke my head into things.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds fun. I'll do that.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I'm going to keep doing whatever else I'm doing.
For me, it's like there's always the guy. It's like, that's the guy. He's like, come on, guys. And he's going to...
The guys.
Yeah. Now there's the one guy who talks and holds the guys together.
Right.
The guy I am, I'm the one where they go like, who the fuck is that guy? Yeah, that's me.
That's Mark.
Yeah. Yeah, don't worry about him. Let's just, where are we going?
Yeah. Why has he got to come with us?
He's not coming with us.
Mark, we have too many people in the car, man.
Good.
Sorry.
Good.
That's your response.
No.
Good.
No, my response used to be like, I'll just follow you guys. I'll follow you in my car.
Yeah, that's
and then
sad.
And then
they ditch you.
Yeah.
They tell you they're going to Mel's Diner. They're really going to Swingers.
Yeah, it's just like your dad.
And I'm waiting outside of fucking Mel's, just tapping my toes with my baseball.
Where are my friends?
My baseball mitt.
Yeah, I was
bat.
That guy until I got hard, man. I hardened up.
What hardened you up the most? What turned you sour?
Well, I don't know what turned me sour. I think when my first real girlfriend, left me, and then when. Late years later, when the second wife left me, but comedically, it's just pretend. Yeah. That you just pretend like it doesn't hurt you until one day it doesn't.
See, because the way I know you is we know each other just as comedians,
right?
We've never spent a lot of time together,
yeah.
And there's a perception that people have of you.
It's wrong.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've learned that over the years that you're not that guy. Because when we speak at the store, it's always very nice and cordial and wonderful. But there is a perception that you're this hardened ex-comic criminal, this like vibe of like, yeah, I do. They have this, there's this fantasy with
it's
you.
Weird.
Well, I think you probably aided in some of it over the years. And well, then a lot of it was created by everyone else.
Well, I think really what it is like I was just angry. I was usually thinking about myself. I wasn't carrying some sort of attitude as much as I was just bitter and weird.
Inside yourself.
Yeah. And then people project onto that. But like as time went on, people who know me, like I'm a fucking marshmallow, really.
Well, here's something that you did that I want to point out.
To you?
Yeah. But it was very funny because there was like a submit to be considered to be in the Emmys. And you had submitted my name was on like a list and you had come up to me at the store.
Oh yeah.
And you had said, hey, I submitted for you for that thing.
Yeah.
And I said, really?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
First of all, I didn't deserve it, but I was like, that's really nice of you. And you were very much like, yeah, it was good. And then you kind of fucked off.
Yeah.
And I think I wrote you an email or a text message or I don't even know how I try to communicate with you.
Yeah.
And I put like a heartfelt sappy thing because I have that inside of me.
Yeah.
And I think all you wrote back was, you got it or something like that.
Yeah.
It was very much like,
yeah,
this is the end. We're not talking about this emotional thing anymore.
But see, the weird thing about that is like I just literally don't have the focus to really dig into a text.
I get that.
So when I go, people think I'm being curt, and I'm not. There's a lot going on. It's just like, what do I got to write here?
Right. Well, some people involve themselves in the emotion of communication, and you're very literal. You're like, this is kind of...
Well, with email and text, I've lost my ability to do that.
Right. See, I've learned that I have to do it more because I've had people tell me that hurt my feelings that you didn't... XYZ. I'm like, shit, I didn't know.
Maybe I should learn that lesson.
No.
Because I put a lot of work into, I do a weekly email blast for the podcast, right?
Yeah.
And I really write the thing, and I'm constantly, just bleeding on my podcast and stuff.
Yeah.
So I put all that emotion out in the world. So when it comes to responding to a text, I'm like, I don't know.
What do you want me to do?
Yeah.
Right. I get it. Trust me, I understand it. Well, because we've disconnected from an honest face-to-face version of the communication to just saying, I want to receive that same emotion, but
maybe you should call more.
Through the letters. I do call people a lot more now. The pandemic made me start calling people. Mm. I would, Fahim Anwar and I have, like I said, he's my oldest friend. I've known him since we literally both moved here.
Yeah.
And only in the past couple of years have we really started to call each other and speak on an almost daily basis because we fucking love chatting with, those are the days when we were younger. We would get some great conversation out, some really deep shit sometimes, or just talk shit and have a laugh.
Yeah.
And that went away. Yeah. Everyone gets busy and then you just stop doing it.
It's weird. Yeah, the other thing with me is I think I'm just a little preoccupied and impolite. I'm not an asshole.
No.
But I mean, those two things can equate that. You know, like if I get to the store, I'm sort of like, what's happening? Where are we going? Why is this? What's going on down here?
Right.
You know, and there's people I know for years, but like.
That's what I learned about you, by the way.
What?
Was that when you're at the club, you are very much at the club, work-minded. Mark is like tuned in.
Yeah.
You're not a, hey, what's going on? Fuck that.
Yeah.
I've learned that like when Marin's there, it's like it's like a tractor beam of thoughts that you're executing in front of your own eyeballs.
Right.
And then you're doing it. And then when you're done, you will say goodbye or
hang out a minute. Yeah.
Right. But it's when you're there for the show, you're very much not a, Sebastian's the exact same way.
Yeah.
People think Sebastian's a little bit, some younger guys are like, oh, he's, he doesn't really talk to him. He just is focused as fuck. He wants to go do his work and then he wants to leave, which I totally respect.
Yeah.
When you're young, you don't get it. You're like, you don't even look at me, man.
Yeah.
It's like,
that's true. That's true. The generational thing. Because there's genuinely people I like seeing. I mean, and I'll talk to them. I'm always happy to see people.
Yeah.
And I think there are people that know who I am inside, and they don't mess with it.
I just say hi to you, and that's it. I always go, hey, and you're always like, hi. That's about as nice. That's about as.
The next thought in my head is like, what does that guy even do? Who's that guy?
Who is that?
Yeah,
because
I don't
bitch.
Know. Like, I hear his name. It's like, he seems to have his shit together. I don't know what he does.
That's kind of nice.
Yeah,
I like kind of floating on my own.
Yeah, but now
shit.
That's over. Now it's sort of like now we gotta lock in.
No,
I'm gonna see.
No, we can continue this fantasy as far as we need it to go. The best part about being a professional and having your own shit going on is that you can kind of just do your own fucking thing and nobody cares anymore.
I don't like that people think like I'm really not what people think I am. And I think that most people who listen to the podcast kind of know that now.
Sure.
But there was this old version of me that younger comics or people who know me from comedy used to have. And maybe I was an asshole, but I was like, I don't know if it was bitter, but sometimes it comes out of me. Like when we off the mics the other day, it's sort of the mics go off. I was like, that fuck that guy. Right?
But
I used to do that just on stage.
Right. See, that's doesn't help. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I didn't know that there was the things you don't say out loud.
But it's honest, if nothing more.
I know, but I used to pride myself on that. But that honesty just makes people afraid of you.
Sure.
Or think you're an asshole.
It's more that they just think you're not someone that they need to associate with
or trust.
Yeah, they're just like, that guy's he's
gonna throw you under the bus. That
right,
guy,
right? He'll say some shit about you.
Yeah, exactly.
Right,
and you don't want to be that.
So instead, people just say hi.
They
just go hi.
Don't give him any more.
Don't rock the boat.
He'll feed on
right,
whatever.
Don't give him ammunition to fucking light you up for no reason.
Yeah,
but that's fine. I do think that's okay because this idea that we're all going to be buddies. What job would you walk into that you're going to be friends with all of your coworkers?
Well, the thing is we took the job where we didn't have to do that.
Right.
And also, like, we're also a bunch of people that really don't fit into other things.
No, we're selfish and self-centered.
We're just
a
bunch of monsters.
Right, we're bad people. Yeah. We all just listen to
terrible.
Me. Yeah, listen to what we're doing
terrible
now.
Terrible people.
Listen to us, please.
We're terrible people.
Yeah, we're worthless.
Just sort of like, you know, have no sense of what it's like to live in the real world.
No.
But mock it.
Right, but shit on it on a daily basis. Yeah,
like what, you got a secure life.
Boo! How's your 401k, Dick? Right, mocking the normalcy. But yeah. that's why
you
I think
enjoy your family. What a
you
puss.
Sicko! You fucking sicko! Follow the sheep.
Yeah, sheep.
You fucking.
What are
sheep.
You doing? I don't know. I'm gonna sleep in.
So that's it, though.
Yeah.
Other than that, I'll figure it out.
Yeah, I'll
I guess.
Figure it out. I got all the time I want, man.
Not you.
Yeah.
That's right. Well, I heard Seth Rogen did Howard Stern, and he had said that about him not having kids, and was like, "I get to sleep in and smoke weed on Saturdays, you know, whatever." And there was a piece of me that was like, "That's very much what comics do." Of
sure.
Like, yeah, I don't have to do the rules, but there was also a sadness behind it, like. It sounds like you might want a thing to do
I learned a lesson at the store once, like when I was like submerged in that place, living in Crest Hill, living and breathing and eating at the store, you know, just fucking coked up and fucked up. And some chick I used to have sex with from in college came out to visit me, you know, and it was like one of these, she was just hanging out and we were like in a circle, like burning furniture at Crest Hill and doing blow and playing guitar. And it was like 4 a.m. And I remember her just like sitting there like, what? What is going on? I'm like, yeah, man. It's like, this is life. You know, this is how we live. Fuck it. You know, and it was just, and she wrote me this letter like weeks later, just, you know, basically saying like, no one wants to live like that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like you're judging these people like, we're not getting up. Fuck the joggers. You know, it's like, who wants to be you?
Right.
You guys are acting like this is the way to be.
Right.
And you're monsters.
This vigilante lifestyle is insane.
It's fucking ridiculous.
I thought about that because I saw a photo the other day about that reminded me about how Belushi. And we regard Belushi as like in that generation of those guys, like just like,
yeah.
Oh, incredible. But the truth was about Belushi and Farley was that lifestyle was a fucking nightmare. Like, it was a nightmare. Like, they were brilliant guys, but we kind of, like...
Got away from them.
Well, yeah. I mean, look what ended up happening to Hunter S. Thompson. It's like, the latter half of that story is fucking sad.
Wet
it's
brain.
Not, it's not cool to, Shivaz Regal and fucking 4 8-balls of Coke and Dunhill's till 5 a.m. and then chocolate cake. Did you ever read what he ate? And then you actually think about it. You're like, that's fucking sad and gross.
No way you feel good.
No, your body's a dumpster, and you're just begging to die.
Yeah.
So, no, it's cool for a moment in time to reflect, especially as a teenager.
Yeah.
When you're a grown up, you're like, this is bullshit.
If you're, depends what kind of grown up you are. There's
well,
plenty,
I guess.
You know.
But when I say that, I mean someone who's learned that life is a lot deeper than just these, like, cool moments. Like, yeah, we get to do coke and
right,
burn.
Right, but the culture's different.
Yeah, it's changed.
I mean, there's no premium on that shit anymore. It used to be like, rock and roll, we're doing it. You know what I mean? We're living on the edge. And now it's sort of like, kind of sad.
It's sad. People died on the edge.
Yeah.
A lot of people fell. This is insane.
Watch your carbon take.
Right. Too much pasta, bro. What are you doing?
Come on, you're going crazy.
You're nuts, man. Yeah. You got to check your health.
Good talking to you, man.
Yes, it was great talking to you, brother. I've got to go finish up your yard with those fellas.
Oh, they're waiting for you?
Yeah, that's why they stopped.
Okay, good. All right, thanks.
Thank you.
That's it. Again, Andrew Santino is a recurring role on the sitcom Dave. You can get his podcast, Whiskey, Ginger, or Bad Friends with Bobby Lee, where you get podcasts, and you can watch them on YouTube. And I don't have any music today. I didn't bring a harmonica. I have nothing to share with you musically. There's an old cat outside. Hey, buddy. Hey, buddy. Hey, buddy. Let's see if we can get the cat to talk to close this out. I'm in a garden room, and there's a garden out here, and there's a cat that lives out here. Hey, come here. Come here. Come here. What do you got to say? Huh?
Great. Great clothes. Good for you. You coming in my room now? You're filthy. Boomer lives. Monkey. LaFonda. Cat angels everywhere, right? That wasn't even a meow. What was that?